I was interested in fly fishing and, in addition, green grass, trees, flowers and all those things that go with it. Dobson himself, I soon discovered, was quite a clever lad, quite intelligent. We were interested in the scout movement, A, because it brought us into contact with young fellows like ourselves, and, what is more, brought us in contact with young people who hadn't had the opportunity that we have of making contact with those things that we thought were important. Nothing to do with pounds, shillings and pence, but a little bit of poetry, a little bit of music, bird watching, astronomy, you know, that sort of thing.
Could you describe the Salford of that period?
Well, the Salford of that period was divided into, roughly speaking, an industrial section alongside which was a residential area. Because of that fact, you'd get what were known then as artisans mixed with people living in the residential area, probably professional in type. The area in which I lived was the hardly middle class, what I call good, honest, hard-working people, and quite respectable people. And it was not an unusual thing to want something beyond one's environment. And it was the spur and the stimulus of that which I think brought Dobson and myself together. Mr. Dobson started life in an office and he eventually became an accountant. I worked in town as well in the cotton trade, and then I became subsequently a cotton salesman, which I considered quite an important position then. To represent a firm, a very respectable firm indeed, was something of an achievement for a lad who'd been brought up in, you know, ordinary surroundings.
Well, when did you decide to create this act?
Well, now then, here comes the interesting little point. Our interests extended toward the cultural. I say that not in any large way. And we were in contact with the extramural department of the Manchester University through Professor Waller. Now, Professor Waller wanted to know whether, in actual fact, we'd be interested to do some work for the extramural department. But the war occurred, and faced with the problem of what we were going to do. Then the suggestion from Waller, would we like to undertake some educational work, lectures, to the men and women in the service. They were closely allied to the AEC, the Army Education Corps, and the Army Education Corps drew on the facilities offered by the extramural department of the university to have available then lecturers to the services. In other words, these were civilians with a wider field of educational interest, bringing their knowledge to men and women in the service who had been removed, possibly, from the facilities that they may have at home. And you know, we watch for the signs of whether we've captured their interest. And the signs are very simple. Down at the middle there is a man who's pulled a cigarette out of his pocket and stuck it in his mouth. And then he's so interested he forgets to light it. What you've got to remember is this. Those men may not be knowledgeable about music, and they may be prejudiced in favour of their own music, which may be pop or anything, you know, that sort of thing. Can I just insert one little thing? If you go to give a lecture at any time, you've got to bear in mind one simple fact. Does the other man want to know? If he doesn't want to know, there's no point in telling him. If you want a donkey to like strawberries, you never give him a pound, you just give him one. And that's what we did. Just left enough to be invited to go again. To do this, you've got to look at it from this man's point of view. Namely, you've got to be able to tell him with truth that there is no other subject with which he is more expert than music. I beg your pardon? Oh, yes, remember. Your relation to music goes back a long way. Remember, Mama? La da da dee dee. You can't say that about mathematics. You can't say that about sailing. You can't say that about golf. You can't say that about football. But music, yes. It's inside us. What was inside the man himself, we brought out for him to have a look at. And finally, he says to himself, ah, well, he's somewhat complimented to think that he is as good as... Now, that's the whole secret. And then, when we got into that stage, we could squirt those things that we thought were important about music. Namely, first, you must listen. Second, you must think. And third, you must get your standards right. There are times when I, as an individual, and I could say this with truth in front of any audience, there are times when I like fish and chips. I also like roast pheasant. But let's have them both well cooked. And to make a statement like that, and then relate it to music, have your music well cooked.
What sort of equipment did you have at your disposal?
We carried with us, all the time, enough to give three lectures, so that no lecture would be complete in itself, because the lecture would be tailor-made for that particular audience. We could alter it and do anything we wanted. We carried records with us, and we used amplifying equipment capable of delivering. Sometimes we talked to an audience of 1,000 RAF men. I don't know whether you know Padgate. They can drill 1,000 men undercover there. If you can imagine a huge hangar. As a matter of fact, very often when we were giving lectures there was a boxing match going on at the other end. On the other hand, if you can imagine 20, 30 men on a special job on an isolated spot, miles away from anywhere, because they were being trained to do a really difficult job, a very serious job. And we would go there and talk to those 25 men. And afterwards, the officer would say, that was wonderful. You'll do more good to these men than ever I can do. See, you bring out if from inside the man that which he's capable of.
Have you any idea how many broadcasts you did altogether?
Oh, I couldn't really give you the exact number because you remember we did a whole series of children's hour. We did woman's hour, we did Forces broadcast, Forces network that is, as distinct and separate from the BBC broadcast that we did on Sunday night after, well, I'm very pleased to say that we followed Churchill. And you know, we had a distinct advantage of in that, insofar as you know, during the war, things were tensed. And Churchill was really the high spot. I think he could claim a listening public of 99%. Immediately we follow him. Well, you can imagine the audience waiting, Dobson and Young. And I think possibly that's how we became quite well known as broadcasters.
Do you still have people contacting you from those days?
Oh, yes, hundreds and hundreds. Matter of fact, I say this very modestly, but my Christmas cards add up to somewhere about 150. Many of these are old friends from all over the world, New Zealand, Australia, America.
Can we move now to today, Mr. Young? What do you do with yourself?
Good gracious me. The days are never long enough. During the last 10 years, I developed what I felt would ultimately be necessary. There would come a time when I would retire. There'd come a time when I would be thrown back on my own resource, inevitably. And looking ahead, I developed other things than talking about music and lecturing.
Can you give me some idea what these are?
I was interested in electronics, interested in engineering, interested in astronomy. You remember the background of Dobson and Young. And I produced original ideas that we were able to bring into our lectures. And this attitude of producing original ideas found its its outlet in producing and inventing things. So I became an inventor, and I patented quite a number of them. More recently, I designed the kite that they took on the Annapurna. I invented a vice. I don't mean the sort of vice you hear. No, a straightforward vice for holding things, you know. At the present moment, I'm engaged in developing an idea that I've got. I may subsequently produce records for children.
What's your favourite piece of music?
To answer that, I would condition a reply by the fact that having listened to... you remember the 6,000 lectures, and we would use somewhere in the region possibly of 20 or 30 records of all types. You can imagine then I've listened to a lot of music played by the very best of the people, performers, in the world. And out of that, here comes the interesting little observation I'd like to make to you. Beethoven was the giant of music. Of that, there's no doubt. But you know, even that giant, producing, as he did, so an enormous wealth of music, what did he write in the last years of his life? He wrote the quartets. All of them I enjoy. Because gone is the colour and the wealth, the bigness of the giant.